Parshas Truma famously has a bit of discussion around it, exactly when, right, when this takes place, quote unquote, right? Is the mitzvah of building the Mishkan something that happens before the sin of the golden calf, before the Chet HaEgel, or is it something that really happens afterwards? Is it rearranged for a different reason? So whatever the answer to that is, right, Truma is the description of all the pieces that go into building the Mishkan. So it starts with the Aron and the other Kelim, the other objects that go into the Mishkan. And then we're going to jump, as it describes each of those Kelim that goes inside, then it describes the walls and how you build the walls of the Mishkan and the different tapestries that separate one section of the Heichal from the other, right? The Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We may be more familiar, where we may picture kind of the Beis HaMikdash, but in the Mishkan also you had these two sections that were separated by a paroches. And then there's also a tapestry, right? There's also, I don't know what the right word is.
Curtain?
Curtain, yeah, but the stuff that goes over the top, right? So it's not a curtain in the way that we think of it, but you also have the covers. So the walls of the Mishkan are solid, they're wood, but then what goes across the top, right, in a building, the Beis HaMikdash, it's a building, so it's a ceiling and a roof, right? But in the Mishkan, you have these skins of things and all, right, other kinds of materials that are going over the top. So that is the actual Mishkan. And then at the very end of the Parsha, right, so if we get to the seventh Aliyah, so the seventh Aliyah describes, now that we've described what goes inside the building and the building, so now we take one step further out, and there's actually a wall around the building. So the building is a little rectangle in the middle, right? And then around that, there is another wall, because surrounding the building is the chatzer, right? So there's a courtyard surrounding the Mishkan, and there's actually again, I'm going to call it a wall, even though it's not necessarily solid. But there is a wall that's okay. Actually around, right? So we're going to describe kind of what that includes. But it's like a fence of sorts, because it's again like not necessarily solid wall, but that goes around the chatzer. So you have, in the terms of the areas of the Mishkan. And again, I keep bringing up the Beis HaMikdash because there are important similarities, right? It's important to recognize that the Beis HaMikdash is like a version of the Mishkan, right? But there also are differences. So, we should know that there's like there's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is where the Aron is, right? The building, right? If you go through the Paroches, walking out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So you walk through the Paroches and you're in the rest of the Heichal, the Kodesh, right? That's where the Menorah and the Shulchan and the Mizbeach HaKetores are. So there's a small Mizbeach, the altar that they would bring the incense on. So that was in that building. And then if you stepped out the door, then you're in a courtyard, which is also fenced off, right? And that's where the big Mizbeach is. So that's where they would bring the animal sacrifices, are in the courtyard. So that's in Shvi. Oh, I made the mistake again. I didn't number the sources. Okay, so we'll number them along the way. Okay, so in source one, right, in the first source is on the page, the Pasuk tells us at the end of the Parsha, Ve'asisa es chatzar hamishkan. Okay, and you should make the courtyard of the Mishkan. Lifas negev timana to the southern edge, the southern corner, klaim lechatzer. There should be klaim. There should be these curtains, these hangings that you should put up. Sheish mashzar that are linen. Me'ava ama orech lapea ha'echas. Right, and there should be 100 amos is the length of that one side. So towards the southern side, you have 100 amos of the wall, which is these kla'im, these cloth, right, linen walls, sheish mashdar. I just think the language is kind of funny. I'm not religious. I think it's like Va'asi says Chatzar HaMishkan. You should make the Chatzar, right? It's like a funny way to describe it, right? Like the Chatzar is the space. It is what is in between the Mishkan and the wall, right? So it's like an interesting phrasing, right? That it's we are making the Chatzar by dividing the walls, right? When you put up the wall, so now you have made the space inside the Chatzar, right? But you're not building a Chatzar. The Chatzar is just the floor, right? It's whatever is already there outside of the Mishkan. But that's the way it's described. So then the Psukim go on to say that each side, and talks about how long the walls are. I'm not going to get into like the exact measurements, right? The Rishonim deal with like are exactly how long each pole is, and then each pole that's holding also this this length of linen tapestry. So like exactly how long every individual piece is and how they line up. And then like when you get to the corners, right, because that's always a discussion, like is the corner one side or the other, and they're up against each other. So there's discussion, and they work it out. We're not going to go into every single detail, but we should know that the Chatzar is outlined by this by these klaim, these curtains that go around the edge. So again, also in contrast to the fact that like when we think of the walls of the actual Mishkan are these wooden walls, but the walls around the Chatzar are mainly what you would see is really this this tapestry, this linen curtain that is cordoning off the Mishkan. So if you have this curtain that goes all the way around the Mishkan, so how do you get in? How do you get into
the side is open?
Right. So Ulashar HaChatzer, and for the gate of the Chatzer, right? So it comes out that the goes through each side and how much space it was, but there's one side where you actually have an opening, and that's the gate of the Chatzer. So the gate of the Chatzer, Masach, you create a screen, Esrim Ama, which is 20 amos long. Techeles ve'argaman v'solas shani v'sheish mashzar. So this this masach, which is the door of the chatzer, this specific curtain is the door of the chatzer, and that is made from techeles and argaman and tolas shani, right? So that is from the blue and the purple and the red strings and the sheish mashzar and also the linen. Maaseh rokeim, and it is embroidered. Amudehem arba'a, and it has four amudim. It has four pillars. Ve'adnehem arba'a, right? So each of those pillars, similar to the way the other pillars were made in the Mishkan, that they have like a base. There's like a metal base that the pillars go into. So that's the adnehem arba'a. So there are four bases with pillars above them, and that's holding this door of the Sha'ar HaChatzer, right? So the actual door to get into the Chatzer is a separate curtain. So if you notice that there is a difference between the curtains around the Mishkan and the curtain that serves as the door, right? The materials, if we're paying attention, so the actual materials are different. So they actually look different. I guess when you're walking up, it's easy to spot the door because everything else is sheish mashzar. It's made out of linen, and the mesech is actually made out of the same thing that like the rest of the Mishkan, right? A lot of the other Mishkan is made of tcheles and argaman and tolas shani, all these colorful threads that are put together into the threads of the curtain. So I brought in the third source, so the Abarbanel, he just happens to spell it out. He's not necessarily the only one, but in describing this door of the and the walls of the Chatzer, the Abarbanel spells out sheish mashzar, that the walls are linen. Kolomar she'ashesi v'ha'erev kulo yiyah pishtan. Right, so just to spell out what, when it's described as sheish mashzar, means that the shesi and the erev, the we only use these words, I think, in the context of Truma Tetzaveh, like these and Vayakal Pekude. How often do we talk about the warp and the woof and the woof? Right, right. We don't. I don't do a lot of weaving things. But right, I guess it comes up in Gemara if we're learning different halachos like Tumah. It comes up. But right, so it's talking about the different threads that go into the weaving. That's the shesi and the erev. So the all of those different threads, kulo yepishan, all of them are linen. Velo yem merukam kiim lavan kulo kidmus kela haonia. So all of these threads are just linen, right? They're not woven. They're not mixed together with other colors. They're not. There's nothing fancy about them. They're just entirely white. So the actual screens that go around the Mishkan are entirely white. He says, like the sails of a boat. That's the kela kidmus kela haonia, like the sails of a boat. So the walls themselves that go around the Mishkan are white. So if we're picturing, right, we might be picturing the Mishkan. So when we think of the actual building, we might know that, you know, there are different colors, right? There are red parts that are going over it. There's the Oros Tachashim, and we talk about how, like, the many different colors that might have been in the skin of the Tachash. And the Mishkan is very, like, colorful, but if you're like on the outside, so what you're actually potentially looking at, I mean, maybe it peaks out above, right? It might peak out above the top. But the actual outside of the Mishkan is white, right? The actual walls around the Chatzer are entirely white, like the sails of a ship. So one idea, I didn't end up following this path, but if anyone has any thoughts, I think it's interesting. You find it in a couple of places where Rishonim spell out that the kela that we're talking about and the way that it's described is like the sails of a ship. So I don't know of something to think about that, like, the outside of the Mishkan is described a couple times in that way. So I was thinking about, like, the Mishkan as a boat of sorts, right, is an interesting thing. I didn't really follow that through anywhere, but something to think about if anyone has any points about that.
Maybe that was just picked because he's a lives in
the
coastal community.
So it could be. You find it by other Rishonim also. So I this is something to think about, like, more closely, whether it's also like a grammatical question, where how far back in, right? There is a historical approach to this and like an ahistorical approach potentially, right? It might be that that the way that they're describing it, right? One is this word, which is the kela ha'onia, to what extent, how far back does it go that sails of boats are described using that word, right? It might be that you find somewhere in Tanakh, I'm not familiar enough, right? It might be that it's clear from Tanakh that that word actually is the same word that is used to describe those things. So that would be one like historical approach to say, like, no, you can actually trace the word back. That's actually what the word means. And that's one point. There's another is to say, like, right, that maybe the word doesn't go back, just they are using something, right? When they say it's like a sail, did the sails that preceded these Rishonim, did they look the same as the sails that they were looking at, right? Is he using it as an example because that is what it looks like nowadays and therefore you can picture it? Or is it because that's what sails also looked like 1,000 years before that? And right, so that's like a separate historical question. So both of those are potential directions to, like, figure out. But again, I didn't really go down that rabbit hole to try to figure out what that might be. Okay, so but the Abar Ben El does point out is that the walls of the Chatzer are entirely white. Now, if we're paying attention, it's true that the walls of the Chatzer are entirely white, except there's one part of the Chatzer's wall that is not entirely white.
The opening.
Right, so the opening is actually different. So even though, right, so what, to whatever extent the outside, whatever, for whatever reason, the outside is white, the door, the Pesach of the Shar HaChatzer, right, the opening of the gate right, is actually not entirely white, because that's what we saw in the second pasuk, right, is that the Shara Chatzer, the gate, is actually Tcheles, Vargaman, V'Shalashani, V'Sheish Marshtar. So it actually has the regular mixture of things, right? So why would it be, that the entire wall is white, but the gate is not, right? Is it just easier to find, right? It's easy to find the door because everything is white and the door stands out, right? So is it, I'm going to propose, it's probably not just a practical point, right? But what is it? What is it that we're supposed to see from the Mishkan? What are we supposed to get out of this in understanding like the Mishkan as reflecting also not just a physical object, but also the ideas that it is trying to convey to us, right? What is the point of the Mishkan's walls? The chatzer, the courtyard, is white, is entirely white, but there is a little splotch of Tcheles Vargaman that we do have the regular colors of the Mishkan that are kind of there, stuck at the front, at the door. So why would that be? Why would the door be different than everything else? Why would we, right, make it entirely white? Maybe the gate should also be white. Why do we need this little bit that is also Tcheles? Why would we, why would Hashem command to do that also? Okay, so that's the chatzer, right? We also need some of that, like, context of just understanding how the chatzer fits to the rest of it. But now that we understand that there's a building inside and there's a chatzer around it, right, why is all of the chatzer's walls white except for the door? Why is that the only place that's not white? Okay, so that's question one. Earlier in the parsha, at the beginning, we're given a list of materials that Bnei Israel are going to be using when they're building the Mishkan. So, in that list of different materials, we have the plants and the oil, and we're also told this is just below the line, the fourth source. Ve'oros elim me'odamim, ve'oros techashim va'atzei shitim. So there's animal hide, animal skin from rams, elim me'odamim, that are dyed red. Red rams, ve'oros tachashim, and tachash skins, again, whatever the tachash is, for right now we're going to put aside. So you have this animal skins that you are going to be using for the Mishkan, va'atzei shitim, and also shitim wood. Okay, so Rashi on this pasuk tells us, va'atzei shitim, this is the next source, Rashi on this pasuk tells us, va'atzei shitim, uminayin, Umeayin hayulahem bamidbar. Where did they get this atzei shitim? So someone asked me, why is it that he asks that about the atzei shitim and not everything else? Right? Like, we've had a whole list of all sorts of plants and things that grow from the ground and colors, oil and
different colors
and things. Right, exactly. All these colors and dyes. And we know Tcheles comes from the Chilazon. Right? The Chilazon is a sea creature. It probably doesn't live in the middle of the desert. Right, we know it. We know probably where it lives. So Barashi doesn't ask like, well, where did they get Tcheles from? Right, specifically here. So it's an interesting question. Maybe we can have an answer. But what Rashi does say is that where did this wood come from? Where did the wood come from? So Pirish Rabbi Tanchuma. Rabbi Tanchuma says Yaakov Avinu. Tzafa beruach hakodesh she'asidin Yisrael livnos mishkan bamidbar. So Yaakov knew that the Jews would in the future build the Mishkan while they are still in the desert. Vehevi arazim lemitzrayim unita'am. And he brought cedar trees to Mitzrayim and planted them there. So there was a tree grove in Mitzrayim that Yaakov had planted specifically Vitziva Levanov, and he told his children, Litulam Yimahim Kishe Yetsu Mi Mitzrayim, that they should take that wood with them when they leave Mitzrayim. So Yaakov literally planted the seeds for this Mishkan, right? I mean, I guess not seeds, he brought trees, whatever. I don't know. But he brought the seeds, the trees of from to Mitzrayim, so that when the time would come to build the Mishkan, they would already have the trees with them, right? That's where they would have gotten all of this wood in the middle of the desert. How would you end up with so much wood? So that's why I wonder if it's not just that there is wood, right? Like, you can get materials from different places, even when you're in the Midbar. But maybe it's so much of it, or maybe it's, right, like, so there might be, like, reasons why this one stands out as opposed to other materials. Where would they have gotten it from? Oh, turns out Yaakov had actually brought it there, right? So there's an element of this that some people like to talk about, that that even in Mitzrayim, right? In Mitzrayim, they are able to look at this little forest that Yaakov had planted, knowing, right, that when you leave, there will be a time when you will leave and you will take these with you, right? That Yaakov literally planted something in the ground that was a sign to everybody, that was a source, a reminder that you are going to leave and you are going to take these with you, right? So that is one element to discuss in this Rashi is, right, that relationship between Yaakov and the rest of the nation, and this idea of tzafa beruach hakodesh, right? We even use this language when we talk about the geula, when we talk about redemption in the future. We talk about tzipisa liyeshua, right? This tzofeh is to look, right? It often means to, like, look into the future, right? To hope for, to think about, right? So when we have that, when we describe thinking about the coming of Mashiach, we say tzipisa liyeshua. Are you looking towards the salvation, right? Are you looking towards that? Same language is what Yaakov is tzafa beruach hakodesh, about what will happen in the future, and he plants this, which also then serves as something that they can look at in order to look forward to the future, right? So these trees have, like, an interesting history where they came from. So that is, I might say, that is perhaps the more well-known element of the story of these.
One reason, I mean, very basic level, why Rashi may have asked about the trees, but maybe all the other things were indigenous to Egypt, but sheepskin wood was not. So therefore, it's not a surprise that they were able to bring dyes and all these other things that they needed, because they were at the local store.
But So if the other materials are things that are local to Egypt, so then these are the ones that may kind of stand out. One, I don't know about support of that, right? But, like, part of this is, like, when we say Atzei Shittim, right? So even in the translation, it just says Shittim wood, right? And Rashi describes what kinds of trees are these. These are Arazim, right? So when we talk about Arazim, these cedar trees, right? Like, those are usually associated with places further north, right? So they usually are, we talk about the Arzei Levanon, right? These cedars of Lebanon, right? So these Shittim trees, if they are Arazim, so then it would make sense that they're actually not freely available down south. You actually would have needed them, right? And then they're also, like, less transportable, right? So that's one of the counterpoints is, like, chilazon. Well, we think chilazon, right, if that comes from, like, higher up in the Mediterranean, right, I don't think that those are necessarily – that's necessarily a dye that they're making in Egypt. But on the other hand, like, trade may have brought it down, right? Like, but, like, these huge logs are not necessarily being transported. Like, you're not going to bump into a merchant – in the desert who, like, happens to have giant, right, like, right, exactly, right, like, right, all of this wood, right, the logging trucks that have, like, huge, you know, logs, like, tied down on them, right, like, you're not necessarily going to find that. So that may be why the Atzei Shittim kind of stands out, and that also, right, now that we've kind of read through that Rashi, and that Rashi is saying these Atzei Shittim are a specific type of wood, and they are Arazim, that also may kind of tie into why the question is here, as opposed to by any other material. So this is, I don't want to say, like, the famous history of these Atzei Shittim. Not everybody necessarily knows this Rashi, but if we know some of the history, this may be the Rashi that we know of. That's important. It's important to think about the place of these trees in the minds of Bnei Yisrael while they are in Mitzrayim, but I want to focus on a different element of their history. Because if we look back at in Bereishis Rabbah, which is the next source, okay, this is the sixth source, Bereishis Rabbah tells us a little bit more of where Yaakov got these trees from. So Yaakov plants them in Mitzrayim, but where did Yaakov get them from? So did he just travel to Lebanon to go grab some cedars because he knew that they were coming? So I think that's right. We might have just assumed that this, right? I don't know. He figures out. He goes and gathers up these trees. But the Medrash tells us the following: Vayisa Yisrael v'chol asher lo v'yavo be'ir hashava. So this is back in Parshas Vayigash. So in Parshas Vayigash, Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. He tells them that he's Yosef, and then he sends them to bring Yaakov and the whole family down to Mitzrayim. On his way, right, Vayisa Yisrael v'chol ha'shelo, Jacob, Yaakov, Yisrael is traveling with everything. So he's brought his whole household is on its way down to Mitzrayim. But what do? They stop. Vayavo Be'er Sheva. They stop in Be'er Sheva. Why do they stop in Be'er Sheva? This is where he has a conversation with Hashem, and Hashem discusses going down to Mitzrayim with him. But the Medrash says, Laheichan halach, where was he going? Amar Rav Nachman shehalach lakotz arazim shenata Avram zekino Be'er Sheva. Where is he going? He is going to get those arazim. On his way down to Mitzrayim is when he is gathering up the trees that he will plant in Egypt for the eventual exodus, leaving Egypt. Okay, but not only is this his chance to gather up the trees, what trees is he taking? He is taking the trees that Avraham planted. So Avraham has planted arazim. Yaakov is now taking those arazim and transplanting them to Egypt. So shehalach lakotz arazim shenata Avraham zekeinu be'er sheva. He is taking the trees that Avraham planted. Where did Avraham plant trees? When did Avraham plant trees in Be'er Sheva? Hechma de'atamar. This is what the pasuk says. Vayita Avraham eshel be'er Sheva. That Avraham plants an eshel. Avraham plants a tree in Be'er Sheva. So that eshel, when Avraham plants that orchard, that pardes, in Be'er Sheva, Yaakov takes that pardes itself, and that's what he moves down to Mitzrayim. So it's not just that Yaakov is taking a symbol that they know will leave with them when they leave Egypt, but it's specifically the trees that Avraham planted. So those trees that go down with Yaakov to Mitzrayim, leave Mitzrayim with the Jewish people, and are now the ones being built into the Mishkan, those are the trees that Avraham planted when he was in Be'er Sheva. What is this tree that Avraham planted? Why would he take these trees, right? Why would he? It almost sounds like a sacrilege, right? Like Avraham planted these trees. Like they've been here since through Avraham, Yitzchak, right? Much of Yaakov's life, and now you're going to take them. You're going to take those trees. They've been sitting here. They've been growing for so long. You're going to take them to Mitzrayim. Go find your own arazim, right? Why does Yaakov need to take these? Why are these the trees that need to be built into the Mishkan, right? What's the connection between Avraham's planting in Be'er Sheva and the eventual building of the Mishkan, right? It seems like there's a thread. There's something that the Medrash is telling us. There's something, there is a connection. There's a thread that is following all the way from Avraham's planting in Be'er Sheva all the way through to the Mishkan. And that Mishkan is built out of Avraham's tree. So what is it about Avraham's tree? There are a couple of approaches I'll point out. There's a Sefer Shvilei Pinchas where he points out this Medrash. He has a couple of approaches. I'm going to take a little bit of a different spin, so I'm not going to quote him because it's not exactly the same. But Ayin Sham, you could check that out in Shvilei Pinchas. But let's look at this tree that Avraham planted. So the Pasuk in Bereishis, just to spell out, the Medrash quoted Vayita, right? Vayita, but what's the full Pasuk? So that's the next source. The Pasuk tells us, Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva, that he plants an Eshel, a tree, in Be'er Sheva, Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. And he calls there, at this Eshel, he calls out in the name of God. Rashi says, it tries to explain, what's the connection between these two, right? The two halves of this pasuk, right? Avraham plants an eshel, and then he calls out to God. Well, what does one thing have to do with the other? So first of all, Rashi says this eshel, there are two different interpretations of this eshel, right? So we're kind of assuming that it is an orchard, a pardes. That's the first one. The second explanation is that the eshel is a hotel? Yeah, exactly. It's an inn, a stopping place, a resting place for people, right? Now, I mean, even if it's a set of trees, right, the purpose of those trees is to provide shade and shelter and bring people in. So they're not necessarily so, you know, different from each other. But this Eshel is a place, whether it is an orchard for providing shade and for sitting under, or it is an actual hotel, okay? So he plants this Eshel and then calls out in the name of God. Rashi explains, Al Yedei Oso Eshel, Nikra Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Eloka L'chol HaOlam. It is through this Eshel, right? It is through this tree that God is declared as the master of the world, right? So why put these two things together? Avram planted a tree, also called out in the name of God. No, because it's through the tree that Avram called out in the name of God. Le'achar she'ochlim v'shosim, after he hosted guests and everyone ate, Omer lahem, he said to them, Baruchu lumi she'achaltem mishelo, oh, you should bless the one who fed you. Sivurim atem she'misheli achaltem, right? You guys think that it really came from me? Didn't come from me, Mishael, me, She'amar, V'haya ha'olam achaltem. You should bless the one who actually created the universe. You should bless God. So Avram would bring in guests. They would eat. They would be satisfied. They'd be refreshed. And then Avram would say to them, okay, now's the time to bless Hashem, right? Now is the time to recognize where it actually came from. And that was his opening. That was a little bit of an opening to say, okay, before you go back to the rest of your life, make one good bracha, right? Recognize where it came from. Make a bracha. So that is the story of the Eshel. Now, where did that Eshel, as we said, where did that Eshel end up? So that, these trees under which Avraham hosted people and then said, here you should recognize God. Here you should bless Hashem. So now those trees are the ones that Yaakov takes with him down to Mitzrayim, right? So it's not just any Arazim. It's not just trees that Bnei Israel can look at, but it's the trees under which Avraham hosted guests. And not only did he host them, not only did he provide for them, but he also had them bless God. Now Yaakov takes those trees and brings them down to Mitzrayim. And where do they go? The Medrash continues. At the bottom of page one, the Medrash continues. Ksiv, v'habiria chatichon besoch hakrashim, that there is a middle, middle pole that goes through all of the krashim. So all of each pillar, right, the walls of the Mishkan are made up of a bunch of different pillars, and each pillar rests on top of a metal base. And through the center of all of those pieces, there is a Briah HaTichon. There is one, not plank, I don't know, one pole, one long pole that goes all the way through all of them and holds them together. Okay? So the thing that holds all of those, the entire Mishkan, the whole structure of the Mishkan is held together through this one piece that goes all the way through all of it, the Briah HaTichon. Amar Rabbi Levi, v'abriach hatichon, shnai mushloshim ama hayubo. This briach hatichon, how tall did it have to be to go all the way through the whole wall? So it was 32 amos. Mehechan matzu oso lasha. Where did they find such a long tree out of nowhere? We immediately need a fully grown tree. Where are they going to get that? In the Midbar, Ella Milamed, Shahayu, it's, again, building off the previous point, Shahayu Mutznain Iman Mimos Yaakov Avinu. This is the one that Yaakov Avinu hid, right? This is the one he set aside for them. So the Medrash started by saying, why did Yaakov go to Be'er Sheva? He went there to get the tree that Avraham planted. Now, where did that tree end up? The Medrash continues, that tree ended up as the center beam that holds the entire Mishkan together. So the entire Mishkan, it rests, I don't want to say it rests on, because like physically it rests on the metal beams, right? But the actual structure is interconnected, it's supported, it's held together so it doesn't fall apart. What is the actual thing that is holding the entire Mishkan together is the wood of Avraham. That Briah HaTichon that comes from Avraham's tree, that is the thing that is there. And Hadahu Dechziv, this is right, the textual, this is another part of why do we think this why do we think this material as opposed to any other? We have another textual indication. Hadahu dechziv v'chol asher nimtza ito atzei shitim. The Torah later on, when it describes the actual building, the actual process of building, not the physical building, but the process of building, it says that you should use the atzei shitim that is found with you, right? Asher nimtza ito, which is found by him, right? By meaning with. It is found with him, meaning asher yimatzei ito. It's the one you already have, right? Yimatzei ito inksiv kan ela asher nimtza ito. It's not the one you will find, but it's the one which is already found by you. Meaning that it sounds like something they already have. So this is another textual indication that the atzei shitim is a material that they actually already had. Because later on, it doesn't say you should find the wood. It says you should use your wood, which implies that they already have it. Okay, so that's another textual indication. But for our purposes, right, we're pointing out that not only did Yaakov go down bringing wood, which relates to our Parsha, right? It's not just, right, that he brings wood as Rashi cites at the beginning of Parsha's Truma, but that wood is the wood that came from Avraham. And where did it end up? Why is it particularly important? Because not only maybe is the Atzei Shitim in general from Avraham, but there's a specific piece of the Mishkan that you would never have been able to find, right? Maybe you could convince people to take apart their houses and sell you the wood, and you could build a Mishkan. I don't know, something like that. But the Briah HaTichon, you need an entire tree to go all the way through your Mishkan. You're not going to have that unless you brought it with you, right? And that piece, that center beam, is the piece of Avraham. And that Eshel is the one under which Avraham said, why don't we bless God? So now that is the piece that rests inside of the Mishkan. The actual Mishkan is held together by that wood, by that building that Avraham used for that experience.
Now, they didn't build the Mishkan around that tree.
Okay.
Right? They put the wood from that tree as the center post, if you will, in the Mishkan.
Right. Right.
So they dismembered the tree, if you will. They
yeah.
Used the wood
yeah.
from the tree.
Right. Which again, like there is an element, as I was saying, of like you might have said it's like right, like Yaakov comes down. Avram has planted these trees, right? And then, like Yaakov, and they've been here for all of his, or the rest of his life, and all of Yitzchak's life, and then most of Yaakov's life. And like now, Yaakov comes along, and like he cuts it down, or he takes them with him, right? And like so, on one hand, there's like a destructive element, but what they're doing is they're using it in order to actually build something new, which is the Mishkan
and for a holy purpose.
Ah, exactly, and. Part of what I'm hearing also is that when we talk about what is the center of the Mishkan, right, there is an important discussion to be had that, like, what is literally in the center, right? To your point, like, what is – the Mishkan is, in a sense, around something else, right? The Aron, the actual – the ark that holds the Luchos, that is the actual center, and the Mishkan is built around it. But what we're describing is that the actual Mishkan, the structure – is held together, right? So the center, in a certain sense, the center of the Mishkan structure is this wood. Now, the Mishkan also has a purpose, which is the ark inside, right? That's what it is built around, in a sense. But the actual structure is now held together. Literally, the walls of this building are the walls that Avraham stood in front of when he blessed God. Right, like that's what the walls are that we are when we are in the Mishkan or we are around the Mishkan. Right, that's what we're looking at. Well, we are literally in the same place. Right, we are in the space of Avraham. Avraham, who stood next to these trees and blessed God in the Mishkan, you are also standing next to those same trees. Right, that is part of what we're creating. And I'd like to go one step further.
One step backward.
Yeah.
what is the meaning of the word tamarisk in...
That's how they define Eshel. That's getting this word that they use. Tamarisk is a type of a tree, I guess. That's the word they're using to translate A-shell. The Pusik said that Avram planted an A-shell. It's an A-shell. So in English, they said it's a tamarisk. But that's what I was going to ask.
Yes.
Similar question. We have three words that we've been using for tree, right? We have the atzeshitim. We have the
arazim.
Arazim.
Yeah, and A-shell.
Is there a reason why different words are used in different places? I mean, is there some essence to the word that is, you know, helping us understand that particular event that it's describing?
So, interesting question, right? Because Chazal are pointing out, like, they're pointing to these trees as all the same tree, right? Again, part of our suggestion before that the reason they don't have shitim wood is because if it is arazim, so then the source of that is actually not local, right? So like that assumption, right, all of that rests on the same idea that they are actually all the same tree. But then why does the Torah use different words in each of those situations, right? So I don't know. I don't really have a full explanation. It's interesting. It is an interesting question. We do find, like by Eshel, right, we do find that Chazal suggests that there's like a no tree cone, right, that there is a hint, there is a an acronym that Eshel, Ayin Shin Lamed, is a no tree cone of Achila Shtia Lina, that eating and drinking and sleeping, right, because he would host people there. So there may be a hint at like the purpose of this Eshel, right? So it's a tree, but it uses a word that also indicates the purpose of that tree. So you may have like in each individual situation, why use this particular word as opposed to the other name for this object? But in terms of the tamarisk, like that's the way they think to translate this word Eshel. They think to translate it as that particular tree. It's clear that the Medrash thinks that it's either a different kind of tree. It's a resin, right? They think that it's cedar. So that wood, that Briach HaTichon, is what holds the Mishkan together. Is this very tree under which Avraham had people for the first time bless God? Right, these people who were foreigners. He didn't know any of them. They were just passing through. They were guests that he welcomed in. And he said, you know what? I've never met you before, right? Maybe I'll never meet you again. You'll walk off on your way. But you know what? Before you leave, let's make one bracha. Let's make one blessing. Let's thank God. Let's thank the real source of all of this food. The Netziv says on the Chatzer, in describing the door of the Chatzer, the Torah used the phrase, oh, tcheles, right? Even though the walls of the Chatzer are white, right? We have a splash of blue that pops up again, right? The door has tcheles again. So the Netziv says, there's a period that kind of got a little messed up here. Okay, aval kulan havyan betcheles vegomer. So he's describing the mesech and the paroches, which just one is the separation going into the chatzer, and one is the separation going into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. But he says, but either way, even though they're made a little bit differently, both of them have tcheles. Velo kemo guf hamechitzos, not like the actual walls. De mishunim harbe kalei hachatzer miyirios hamishkan. The yirios, the walls of the mishkan of the chatzer, are actually very different than the yirios, the walls of the mishkan. Okay. V'yesh lilmod. Why is the mesech have tcheles? V'yesh lilmod de tchilas kenisa lekedusha. When you are first beginning to enter towards Kedusha, right? So you are walking from the regular camp, and now you are about to enter the courtyard of the Mishkan. You are about to start this process of Kedusha. Afal gav shehu lo higia la'omek. Even though you haven't really reached anywhere deep, you haven't reached the depths of Kedusha, you haven't gone to the Heichal yet, you haven't gone, obviously, to the Kodesh HaKodashim, you're about to walk into the courtyard, which is around the building, which is around the Kodesh HaKodashim, right? You're like all the way on the outside. But still, when you start, Techilas Kenisa LeKedusha, V'adayin hu mibachutz, and you're still outside. U'misnahi kamo sharoi bachutz, and you are still going to act the way you do when you are outside, right? There is a different type of way that we act when we are inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's true. And when you're bachutz, you don't act like that, right? There's no reason to. You're not supposed to act like you're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You act like you're bachutz. You act like you're outside. That's fine. Mikol makom, still, betchilas kinisaso yesh lehis kadesh. Still, when you start the process, you start an element of kedusha. There should be a little bit of kedusha. Kedesh yagia achar kach bizman meuchar lemakom kodesh. Because you're starting the ball rolling. When you start towards Kedusha, even though you're Bachutz, there should be a little bit, right? Even though still you're on the outside, there should be a little bit of Kedusha, because that is what you will build off of in the future when you go further, when you get deeper. So right now, you're not Le'omek, you're not in the depths of Kedusha. But at the very beginning, when you approach the Chatzer, there's a little bit, there's just a touch of Kedusha.
Just like when you're walking to shul and you go from outside to the hallway and then eventually into the shul when you're...
Right, there's an on-ramp, yeah. That like, right, you don't just immediately go from outside straight into the center of the shul, right? You don't just jump from one to the other, but, right, you come in and there's a hallway, right, and you get yourself settled, and then you walk into the shul, and then you walk towards the front, right? So there is like there's a process that you go through, and it's not jumping automatically from one to the other, but that, and also, right, it's very difficult to just jump, to have nothing, and then all of a sudden to have everything, right? I'm not going to start from the outside and then be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But you know what? When you start that process, you have this little bit of Kedusha, Kidesh Yagia Acharkach Bizman Meuchar, even though later on, right, it's not going to happen immediately in your life, maybe, but later on you will have something that builds off of that in order, right? You have an entry point from which you can now start to build more Kedusha, and then you can get further. Mishum Hachi bePesach Chatzer Yesh Techelas. And that's why the door of the Chatzer has Techelas. Shemara zechiras kisei hakavod, because the blue, as we find in other sources in Chazal, that the blue is a reminder of Hashem, right? The blue of the sky, and we think of the kisei hakavod of God's throne, right? So this idea of techilas is a reminder. It's something that brings to mind Hashem. So even though, yeah, the whole wall is white, right? This is not a place of kedusha. It's not like in the Mishkan, where wherever you look, when you're in the building, wherever you look, it's color and it's blue and it's, right, the techelas is all over the place. That happens in the Mishkan. Outside, you look around, we're still clearly outside. It's still white, but you have a hint. You have a little bit of this kedusha that you are experiencing. And I would like to propose, right, that this element starts at the very outside, right? From the first moment you walk into the Mishkan, and it is embedded in the very building of the Mishkan as well. It's true that inside of the Mishkan, if you looked around, you see a lot of techeles and a lot of reminders of God. That's great. That's true. But what is the actual Briach HaTichon? What is that beam that holds together the entire Mishkan? Is Avraham sitting down with somebody who has no connection at all, who may not have any connection after that? Yeah, he brought in a lot of Gerim, but not everybody, right? But where does it all start? Even if he did convince them, even if he did bring them, you know, into his household, where did it all start? It all started with one bracha. Let's bless Hashem. You ate. Let's recognize where this came from. That one little step is the beginning of everything that Avraham made. Right? Everything that Avraham was able to do was because of that one little step. So from the first moment you walk into the Mishkan, we have this recognition, as the Nitziv says, that everything is, it's all white. Everything, you don't have this sense of Kedusha. You just have one little piece of Kedusha. The door, that's it. That's one little reminder of God. So that's from the outside. All the way to the actual inner core of the Mishkan is the same idea, that this, the core of the Mishkan is the same idea, that first step is important. That first step is the one that you are going to build off of in order to get to the rest of it. So even though the outside, when we look at the Mishkan, the outside looks very colorful, and it looks like, these are all great reminders of God, and they're all very deep and esoteric. And inside of that, in the very core of that Mishkan, is the first step. Avraham saying, before you move on, before you go, before you leave my house, and as the language of the Nesiv, you're mi bachutz and you're misnahi kimo sharoi bachutz. Right? You're going to act the way that you're supposed to act. You're not in a temple. Go about your life. Go about your life. That's fine. But you know what? Before we do that, let's make a bracha. That one step is the thing that now is the starting point for building more kedusha into our lives. And that is inside, hidden inside of the Mishkan, that the entire Mishkan is built off of. And that is what we experience when we enter the Mishkan, as we walk through the walls, right? And we just have that first hint of kedusha as we hit the gate. So it's all the way on the inside, and it's all the way on the outside, right? Because that is, because it is the base, the foundation that the whole Mishkan is based off of. That's Avraham's experience. And then we all go through that as we enter the gates. And the importance of that first step, that first beginning, is just elaborated on in this final source, this idea of plausible paths. In this discussion about, this is a language that he came up with. This is Eric Johnson, in the Elements of Choice. But he's talking here about the importance of the first decision, right? In any series of decisions, the first decision that we make is often weighed much more heavily than everything else. Not just weighed heavily in the sense that that we think more about it, right? But that is part of it, right? We potentially think more about it. But even when we don't think about it that much, it is very heavy in that once I make that first decision, I'm often limited in where I'm going to go from here, right? That first step is the thing that sets me on this path moving forward. And it is the thing that builds off of, right? So our initial choice of a plausible path is sticky. We might change paths, but our first choice has inertia, right? That first choice is very important because that is often what is going to set the stage for later on. In a very literal mashal, right? This is an experiment at the Copenhagen airport where they had two lanes. If you were declaring something in customs, you stayed to the left. And if not, you stayed to the right. The problem was, it's such a unimportant thing, right? Seems like. But if you stayed to the right, even though there are two doors, because people stayed to the right, they all went through the right door. And no one was using the left door. And it was just taking forever for people to get out the door. And there was an open door, but no one was using it. Because once you move to the right, everybody walks down towards the right. So they did it by creating, literally just painting, I think they used tape to make two lanes. So it was clear that you could actually walk down two lanes. But it's all as a mashal, it's a real literal thing to think about in life, right? But this airport, Copenhagen airport is less important than the idea, right? That first step, that first decision is the thing that later decisions are based off of, right? And this idea perhaps we can root in the Netziv, this idea that when you're starting, even though you're not all the way on the inside, that first step of Kedusha is weighted very heavily. That's very important because that is the one that we will build off of in the future as we go further into the Mishkan. And that is what we find hidden inside of the Mishkan. That is the Briach HaTichon of Avraham. That is the message perhaps of Avraham that we needed to take with us, that Avraham said at the very beginning, you're starting from nothing. Maybe you have no Kedusha at all, but you know what? Take that first step. That one little bit that Avraham helped people walk down, right, is the thing that we now take with us, and we literally build it into the Mishkan. That is what the Mishkan is rooted in. That's what it's based off of. So this idea of the Atzi Shittim is one, right? There's this practical, right? It's almost like, it almost sounds silly, this like practical part of like, well, where did they get the wood, right? Well, oh, they happen to have had wood, right? But now, not only is it explaining literally what happened, but also it is helping us understand why the wood of the Mishkan, why would it come from Yaakov, that really coming from Avraham before him, that that lesson of Avraham, that the first steps are all important, is really what we are building into the Mishkan and building into the rest of our lives.
Was there, I'd say, shoot him in this?